You've read and heard from all the others. Now the real story on today's biggest topics. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And joining us right now, Alexis Harrison has been one of the first people to alert me, frankly, to a lot of the changes that were proposed, that are still being proposed, some of which have made it through committee in this last legislative session. And just to let you know, we are really drawing a line from the current trial right now for Derek Chauvin, who was accused of murder for excessive police brutality against George Floyd, which I think the whole country reacted to with horror. But we'll have to see what the jury has to say about it as a legal matter. But in terms of the visceral reaction, it was a cataclysmic event. It propelled Black Lives Matter into the mainstream of American life and many cities. And out of that, a group formed in Connecticut, led by Sarah Bronin, who is a law professor at UConn, and she's also the wife of Hartford's mayor, Luke Bronin, and she herself served on the zoning boards in Hartford for a number of years. And she created something called Desegregate Connecticut, drawing a line between, this is in her own words, drawing a line between the happenings of excessive police brutality and trying to create more equity for Black people statewide. Her vision of that is to transform the way in which we plan and develop housing in all of our states and communities. And to that end, she has led proposals that are everywhere from finance to housing to zoning to transportation with respect to various ways in which our housing development proceeds in Connecticut. And joining us now are two people that have become very educated about these proposals. They object to the idea that Hartford can plan our cities and towns better than we can. Alexis Harrison, welcome back to the show. Who do you have with us
this
morning?
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you so much. Good morning. Happy spring. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too. So, Alexis, who do we also have on the line? Do we have your friend?
Oh, sorry, Lisa. Yeah, we also have Maria Weingarten. She's another member of the CT 169 Strong Group, which is composed of people across the state of Connecticut who are really concerned about the notion that Hartford could take over our local zoning laws. And she's been doing a lot of research and analysis of the data and the bills that have come out of committee last week. You know, we believe that these efforts to the state mandate is really would be opposite of what we've long established and have had a long tradition of in the past, of having communities have a direct say over their destiny, essentially. You know, we believe local communities know their towns best and should be making those decisions, not our politicians in Hartford. So we're fighting this, and we're really trying to drive awareness to everybody.
Well, thank you for that, Alexis, and welcome, Maria. Good morning. So let me start with
you,
Maria.
So
hello,
much.
And good morning. Welcome to the show today. Maria, would you give us some of the nuts and bolts of the bills that have what we call come out of committee, which is to say the legislature will have to vote on them? And this is important for everyone listening to understand, because it may be that your legislator wasn't paying much attention to this issue because they weren't on a committee that had to look at this before. But now that it's what we call passed out of committee, they will have to vote up or down on this. And so we want to know what's in the bills right now so that you can advise your legislators, pro or con, how you feel about these issues. Maria, tell us, what is in some of these bills by number and by substance? And I'm writing this down.
Okay. Well, first I would just like to say I would direct everybody to the CT169strong.org website, which actually has summaries of the new language in all the bills. So you can actually see that. As well, we have posted all of the substitute language, which unfortunately is still not up on the state websites. So luckily, we've been able to obtain that information and put that on our site so that anybody who wants to, and I highly encourage that everybody do, read the language that's actually in the bills. So because that's what's not being done here is we are not providing the entire state, all of our residents are not being provided the facts of what's in these actual bills. That being said, let me start with Bill 6611, which is the Fair Share Bill. And this bill Basically, Hartford will decide, agencies in Hartford will decide what is the fair share. They make an assessment of what all of the units they believe of affordable housing are needed in the state. And then they will say to each COG, this is the amount that your COG will be responsible for. Our state is divided into 9 COGs. And the most recent version of 6611 actually combines Metropolitan COG with the West COG, which is Fairfield County, essentially. And so this deems to allocate a very large share of new affordable housing to throughout the state. And in some instances, when you start to do the math, that's where this all starts to fall apart. Because they're suggesting, for example, let's say, let me just pull up my spreadsheet here that I just created. So let's just say New Canaan. They're suggesting that New Canaan should have 1,350 units of new affordable housing just in New Canaan. And so there's a couple ways you develop that. One way is to just develop affordable housing. So you create buildings that have just 1,350 units of affordable housing.
Oh, my God.
That's just New Canaan. The next question is, so what's another way of doing that? Well, you know, something that Westport does is inclusionary zoning, right? So Westport says, if you're going to build, we want you to do 20% affordable within any development that you're doing. So in New Canaan, using that metric, if we said 20%, which is really not what's in any of these bills. All these bills recommend just 10%. So that would mean New Canaan would have to allow developers to build 6,749 units just in New Canaan. And what is our total of units currently? What is the total of all of our housing in New Canaan right now? 6,749. So they essentially want us to double our size of our units in our town to accommodate this extra build of 1,350 units should we decide to do it through an inclusionary housing way, which is shocking. And that's for all of Fairfield County, that's pretty much what they're asking for. Many is a doubling of your current housing stock in your town to create a fair share number of affordable housing units. So that's Bill 6611. So that is pretty much, I think, one of the most dangerous bills that's out there right now. Then you've got SB 1024, which was the desegregate bill. And the desegregate bill has removed the most egregious parts, which was Section 6. So that has come out in the substitute language. But we know that Sarah Bronin had a conference just this past, I believe, this past weekend, and she said that she wants all that language to go back in. And definitely there are a number of legislators out there, Democrat legislators, that are pushing to have that language put back in. So that would not be beneficial.
And on SB 1024, I noticed that there is a passage in there in which the State Department of Environmental Protection is prohibited from reviewing these housing applications. That shocked me.
Right. And actually, one of the things we're starting to investigate right now that's really concerning is towards the end of the bill, where they talk about the new alternative sewer.
Go ahead.
So what that really means is, so you've got towns that may not have sewer. So this is, again, why we keep saying we are 169 different cities, suburbs, and rural communities, and you cannot treat them all the same. So the addition of this portion of an alternative sewer is sort of, I think, an end run around the fact that some towns and communities don't have sewer or don't have it in many parts of their communities. So what they're trying to do in desegregate is increase the capacity of an alternative sewer. So it really is a larger septic system. It's a community septic system. So you could have a number of different units different, whether it's multiple housing, whether it's cottage clusters, you can have them all of their waste flowing into this one septic, which they are now trying to increase the capacity by 150% from what has been done in the past. There's another bill that's also out, which I'll just mention briefly with this, in conjunction with that, which is SB 961. That one would double the alternative sewer capacity, double. And what we've found out is that there are systems. Rhode Island has had problems with this. They've had similar systems, and they've failed. Massachusetts as well has had similar systems that failed. And the issue really becomes maintenance. So you can have a private developer create a system like this, and if they're not maintaining it properly, all of a sudden you can have an issue that happens, and they're very expensive. And so when they start to fail, if a developer goes out of business, it now becomes the responsibility of the municipality or the regional government, if you're considering New York State, which also has two counties which have had issues with these.
So Maria, when you step back a little bit, when you just step back a little bit from some of this, what you really see is that the policy and the result is driving all of the bills. In other words, no matter what they have to say that they have to do to accomplish this, they're going to do it. Regardless of logistics on the ground, sewer capacity, environmental oversight, open space protections, wildlife habitat, it doesn't matter because it's just they want to get it done. That's all it is.
It is a drive toward exponential overdevelopment in suburban and rural communities. And we've heard that said often, that it's turning suburbs into cities. And that is really the intention here. And I think what's really egregious is it really does not take into consideration what are the capacities that communities have. How much more capacity does a town have in its sewer to allow, greater exponential development?
I think that's one piece. I think the other piece is it really benefits builders.
Absolutely.
It benefits developers. I mean, that's really what it's about. Follow the money on the micro. You're going to have a developer say, I used to be able to build one or two units. Now I can build 4 to 9. And I'm putting it to you, planning and zoning. I'm daring you to overturn me. Because then if you overturn me, I'm going to bring it to a court. And a court is going to look at this legislation and I'm going to win. So before the zoning authority even opens up its mouth, it's defeated. And that's going to lead to tremendous frustration and unhappiness by individual communities all over the state. Because they're not going to have an outlet. They're not going to have an outlet to object.
Right. And I've been going to planning and zoning meetings for as long as I can remember, since I was in my 20s.
Me too.
I've been involved with land use issues. And that is the beauty of our democracy, is having that ability to weigh in on a development, because this is our
community.
We know the traffic flows. We know the topography. And to deny the public that is really, really an affront to us. And I don't like it.
All right, ladies, just stay with me for a little bit. We're gonna return. We've got some commercials. I want to go into some more of this. 203-333-9422. I'd love to hear from you and our listening audience. What do you think when you hear about all this policy? You think it's worth it? It's an end that justifies the means? What do you think? 203-333-9422 on the Lisa Wexler Show today.
Lisa wants to hear from you. Call her at 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show is on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. We are here with two women that are Maria, what is your last name? Weinstock?
Weingarten,
pardon me. Maria Weingarten and Alexis Harrison. They are members of CT169strong.org, and I've been on their website, And we're talking about some of the nuts and bolts, some of the ways in which, and we're getting into the weeds a little bit. We're talking about sewers versus septics versus capacities. One of the things that Bill, I think it's 1024 does is it insists that if your sewer capacity is 5,000 gallons, it go immediately up by 50% to 7,500 gallons. Why? What's this about? Well, it's dictating from on high larger capacity. It's a little ironic, ladies, that this is coming from a woman who is, and her supporters, not just her, but she in particular knows so much about Hartford, and yet it doesn't seem like there's an attempt to be made to remake cities and make them better, safer, have them have more open space and breathable places to live. It only seems that it's coming in one direction.
Correct. Right. No. And right? Again, this is
it's very interesting because market. our cities are problems. They're problematic. They don't attract young people. When they're so-called gentrified, there are issues of reverse racism, that they don't want some white young yuppies taking over spaces for poor people. It's a very complicated, nuanced conversation about housing and development. And none of that nuance is happening in this conversation. I'm going to go to a listener, Esmeralda from Fairfield. Hello, welcome to Fairfield. The show today. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I speak to what you're saying. We went through the same experience. It took us 2.5 years to fight a greedy developer. He was trying to put 25 houses under our kitchen window.
I believe.
And unfortunately, the owner behind us was in on it, and they were trying to take our driveway because we share a driveway. So they didn't care about any kind of preservation of the wetlands. They didn't care about the character of the neighborhood. They were going to put 100 galleys back there to drain all the water that was going to come over here on our property. But it was relentless, and it went on for 2.5 years, and it was very expensive.
I bet it was. And you probably felt like very victimized by all of it.
I was out of my element. And the reporter from the Post came to see me and he said, oh, the resident has her feathers ruffled. And then the neighbor behind me had set this whole thing up because he knew that was the only way he was going to make money, you know, on selling his property behind me and developing it.
So what happened, Esmeralda? Did you have any hearing in front of local
a
planning
lot of money,
and zoning?
And yeah. they settled for one house.
You got them to settle for one house. And is that because, to some extent, the laws were on your side or your local
no, the laws
zoning
were
people?
On the developer
no?
side.
I
because
see.
Because of 34G.
Right. 830G, you mean. 830G, I think, is what you mean.
Was it 34G?
Yeah. Now, I think it's called 8-30G. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, because they didn't have enough. They didn't have the quota of low-income housing in the neighborhood. But the developers are right on this, and they are so greedy and so uncaring of what's going to happen to the surroundings. And if something goes wrong with after the fact, like you said before,
they're gone.
There will
they're
be gone. Nobody to go after.
Nobody.
No,
they form individual LLCs for a particular development. Then they go to the next one. Sometimes there's a construction bond. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes the bond isn't enough money to fix what's wrong. Good luck finding them. Absolutely. That's the reality of life. That's what happens.
Yeah, they disappear. And now, you know, it's very complicated, but heaven help you if they want to put 50 houses up your butt. Is all I have to say.
Yeah. I'm sorry I had to fight that fight, Esmeralda, but I'm glad in the end that you prevailed.
Well, we had a compromise, and it's still not great, by the way. But anyway, it's better than it could have been worse.
Could have been worse. Thank you, Esmeralda. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 203-333-9422. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, this is Alexis again. She brings up a really good point, is 830G, which is the affordable housing law that we've had, you know, for about 30 years or so. And, you know, that took a whole year. I mean, the governor then put together this Blue Ribbon Commission, and it was really a year of study and research before they came up with 830G. So, A, I don't see 830G part of this larger conversation with these dozen or so, you know, zoning bills that are in front of us and how it works. And, you know, and then my second point is why are we doing this so quickly? What is the rush? I mean, personally, I think we should be spending more time doing our diligence, having our stakeholders at the table, everybody. You know, I've said this before to you, Lisa, and I find that this process just really demanding. You know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. People are not focused on the activities happening in their legislature. They want to get their kids back to school, get vaccines, get back to normal life. They're probably not focused on this. So what is the rush?
Well, not only that, what is the rush? What is with the 24-hour hearings? What is that about? Have you gotten an answer on that?
No. as someone who testified at roughly 3:30, 4 a.m., there were plenty of people who were never able to testify, and they were just told to just go ahead and submit their testimony in writing. They started at 10 a.m. They finished at the next day, 10 a.m., and there were hundreds of people who were still looking to speak, and I personally know a number who were looking to speak who were against it. And it was quite a mixed bag in that last couple of hours where they were just pulling whoever they could on. And so I think Desegregate has put out comments about how so much testimony was overwhelmingly in favor whoever testified. Well, it's interesting because if you look at who testified, it was, you know, these nonprofit activist groups, housing activists. It was attorneys, working on the Woodbridge case, and a lot of student activists. And I think a lot of the residents of our towns, even chairs of planning and zoning commissions, other interested parties who have skin in the game, were not able to testify in person, and they were not able to be questioned by members of the committee. And although Senator Wong had asked for the hearing to be continued, he was denied, as well as other members had asked for it to be continued, and that was denied.
So that's in itself, we should just pause and say how infuriating that is. I mean, we live in a democracy, and until this legislature, Jonathan Steinberg was on the air with us, and he said until this legislative session, he's never been in a legislative session where people who wanted to testify didn't get their chance to speak. It never happened before.
Wow. Yeah, and this is like a David and Goliath situation.
Well, it's a David and Goliath situation. Nobody should be forced to wait until 3:30 a.m. because nobody should force to listen at 3:30 a.m. Some of these legislators are wearing it as a badge of honor that they went 24 hours in a row. That's not a badge of honor. That shows a mismanagement of the legislative process. Do it for 2 weeks every single day from 9 to 9. You don't need to do it 24 hours in a row. It's because of the rush. It's because they must have it rushed out of committee in order to be voted on up or down before the legislative session is over. So it's instead of the process being really important, which is what it always should be in a legislature, it's the end that's more important. And they wanted to get this out of committee in time to be able to vote on it, regardless of how many people wanted to testify. That's what happened.
And I can't help but feel that they wanted it to get out of committee without the sleeping giant knowing what's happening, without all of the residents of our state truly understanding what's in the language of the bills. Because you have Sarah Bronin out there talking about two to four units, but when she had her discussion in New Canaan, New Canaan leaders talk housing, which is also included on our website. You can go ahead and watch the entire presentation. There were discussions where she had said that there's only 2 to 4 units. Well, her bill was full of, it has to be a minimum of 15 units, And another section of the bill says that there should be no cap at all.
Wow.
So how does that square away with a town that may have a height restriction, a suburb that has a height restriction of 4 stories or 5 stories?
Right. Right, which
How
most
does any
of our
of that
suburbs
reconcile?
Do.
It doesn't.
Right, it doesn't. Well, I want to thank you, ladies. It's ct169strong.org. I'm on the website now. It's very clear. It's very obvious. And if you want to be part of the mission, now is the time to speak to your legislators, pro or con. Thank you very much for joining us on the show this morning. We'll be back with more in the next hour.